Blog Talk Radio.
One that was a full track loop from Danny Tate. He gave us to use on our radio show for the first appearance. Anyway, good evening, everyone. We are Faceless Radio. We are on the Hidden Truth Revealed channel on Block Talk Radio, right, Robin?
That's right.
Let's see. We are called The Inside Scoop. My name is Luann Fleming, and I am with my other co-host tonight, Robin Austin. Say hello to everyone.
Hello to everyone. I'm so happy that you're joining us. I think we have an excellent show tonight. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Here you go. And we also, Marcy Friedman's taking the night off. She's with her son. I guess it's his birthday week, so she has the night off. But we will always want to keep Marcy in our prayers as she lost her mother to all this guardianship abuse going on. So we're going to keep her in our prayers tonight. And we do have Hillary Hogue, though, with us. Hillary Hogue, say hello and hello to everyone. Boy, I can't talk tonight.
Hi, everyone. And I am Hillary Hogue, and I am an activist from New York, but I've lived in Florida for 18 years. And what I have seen, as a friend said, I have seen the dark side of guardianship, and it's not a pretty sight. And I, along with Robin and Luann and quite a few others, search for freedom and justice on a daily basis in the probate courts throughout the country. So I am proud to be here with my friends Robin and Luann, and looking forward to chatting and unfortunately hearing about our guest nightmare. With probate.
Right. And I heard that Barbara Stone wanted to come on for a little bit and talk to us a little bit about what's going on in Florida. So if you're on our radio show right now, please press a 1 so I can bring you into as one of our guests, please, if you could do that real quickly. And we will bring you on. And if so, let's see if this is her. Hold on. Hold on a second. Okay,
can you
Barbara?
Hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Go. Yeah. This is everyone. Everyone that's listening. This is. I guess it's Barbara Stone, right?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi, Barbara. I want to make sure the right person first. Welcome to the radio show. Yeah, I got a call earlier that you had some things that you wanted to talk about, which is great. So go ahead and talk about what's going on. I think in Florida, right?
Yes. Well, first I want to say thank you for having me back on the show, Luann and Robin, and hello to Hillary. And so I'm just going to take a few minutes because I know that you have another guest, and I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. And this is in Florida. And before I get into the announcement, I just want to say that, you know, the last time I was on the show, I discussed the fact that we have a national group. We're represented in 23 states right now for crime victims, because people are crime victims of this illegal human trafficking enterprise, which they call by the euphemism of guardianship. So I can get into that a little bit later in more detail, and maybe even on another show, because it's very, very important that people understand that. And so the point is that of all of the people in all of the states, in Florida, we have probably 4 times as many crime victims of the human trafficking racket called guardianship, because it's ripe for the pickings, because there's so many older adults with assets that moved to Florida, and our esteemed governor, Ron DeSantis, runs this crime enterprise where, and I have to get this in, so just excuse me. So now he's, you know, forgiven our wearing the mask and getting rid of the COVID mandates in order to encourage people to come to the human trafficking state of Florida, where they can be imprisoned in guardianship and stolen, their assets stolen, and then murdered. So everybody needs to be aware Florida is the Nazi state of guardianship. And so that kind of precipitates what I'm going to say with regard to the rampant run by the color of law legislators that are running the state of Florida, as well as all other states, to put together an incredible string of illegal void human trafficking laws called by other names, which deprive us of our unalienable rights. And so there's been groups that have made the homage to Tallahassee in the last couple of months, you know, to appear at these preordained, already determined, so-called, you know, legislative sessions, where they're pleading with these criminals running the state to not enact these human trafficking bills to no avail. So they're kind of like falling from the sky. And it's, you know, people need to really understand and accept what's going on. You know, you can no longer just say, well, this is, you know, an isolated instance, or, you know, forgive the criminals running our country. This is, we're in an undeclared cold war with the government employees, public servants that are raping us and murdering our rights. And people have to quickly, you know, assimilate the fact and start dealing with it. And so people are starting to do that. It's finally turning the corner where people are no longer denying and protecting, you know, the criminals, thinking that they did something wrong. And I think that we need to shift the focus from these horror stories of each of the victims and start putting the onus directly where it belongs, on the legislators, the judges, and the governors running the country, without whom this horrific U.S. Holocaust could not be occurring. People are getting murdered. We have someone in the group right now whose wife has been stolen in this human trafficking enterprise, and he had to get permission to go see his wife, and he sent me a video, and she's unrecognizable. Her face is swollen up 4 times. She can't speak. She's horrifically drugged, and she's in the process of being murdered. So I'm just going to say that again, because I want people to understand what's really going on. We've got photos, I think I mentioned the last time I was on the show, of this young boy, the child of somebody in the group. You can see that he's being sex trafficked. It's no secret. You can see in the photos that he's bruised in places where he shouldn't be bruised, and he's being sex trafficked. And this is just 2 stories of the horrors, and they're getting so brazen in Florida because people have allowed their rights to be raped and stripped. And we've got to reclaim our rights, and we've got to protect our rights, because if we don't, we don't have any rights. And so that's kind of the background of where I was getting to get to the announcement that I want to make. So I'll just stop and let you or Robin or anybody, you know, if you have any questions.
Well, you know, you've used some very, very strong language in expressing this, and it may cause some people to recoil. It may cause some people to feel somewhat put off, because they, it's hard for them to imagine that things really are as bad as you say. So I'm very glad that you brought up a couple of specific examples of why that language is appropriate. And I want to reinforce for our listeners that although it sounds rather extreme, this is because it is extreme. We are in a situation where there is war being waged, and it is an invisible war to the vast majority of people in the United States. because it's not like the war that you'll see on television. It's not like the war that is covered on the internet with videos, unless you get into the very specific area of exploring these stories and finding out about them. So I want to back up what you're saying and let people know, although it may sound like this is these are extreme examples, unfortunately, sadly, the reality and the truth is that these are not extreme examples. Right. These are rather typical examples that are found far, far too often in places all over the United States and the world.
Right.
And that's my two cents. I wanted to add that in so that people understand that this is not just a person who is obviously at their wit's end trying to get across the message that these things are very real. This is a war. We're taking casualties. People are being killed. People are being sex trafficked. This is all real, and it's very horrifying. And you have to use this very potent words and potent language to try to break through the patina of civility that has surrounded this subject, because the other side, the side that we battle against when we're trying to establish some kind of justice in these courts, has put up this shiny patina of the word guardian carries all these implications of, oh, we're guarding these people. We're taking care of, and we're the guardians that look after. And you have to break through that patina of lies and untruths to begin to understand that these are criminal enterprises. These are criminals pursuing criminal enterprises, and those criminal enterprises involve kidnapping, murder, sex trafficking. All of these are true. All of these things are happening right in our country, right under our noses. And the only reason you don't know about it is because the people that are involved at some of the highest levels own most of the media in this country, and they're not going to tell you those stories.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and this is, Barbara, are you guys having a march or something going on here in a few weeks?
Yes, well, that's why I kind of gave the introduction. And also, I want to thank you very much, Robin, because I knew that you were going to pick up on using that language, and I want to expand on it, maybe not now, but at some other point. And so I appreciate your saying that, because this is exactly what it is. And so that introduction was just to, bring about the point that, yes, we are now going to be starting to hold protests all over the state of Florida, where we're going to be exposing these human trafficking laws for what they are, and we're going to be warning the people of what's going on, and we're going to be demanding that these laws that are illegal and null and void be taken off the books. They have to be taken off the books, because keeping them on the books is a whole other set of what's called atrocity crimes, because that's what these are under the under international law. So our first protest is going to be held in Lakeland, Florida on March 15th, starting at 10 o'clock. And if you'd like, I'll give everybody my contact information so that if anybody's on the show and they want to reach me and find out the particulars, feel free to be in touch with me. Again, it's going to be Tuesday, March 15th.
And then we'll ask for it again later.
And Ken, you do have a computer, and you can post anything like that on our website, up on Facebook. It's Families Against Court Embezzlement Unethical Standards, Face Us. So if you can put that up in there, we'll be glad. I will take that, and I'll share it in all the different ones that I have as well. That's how I usually get the news around on Facebook about what's going on.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, if I have a problem, I'll ask Marcy to help. But, yes, I'll do that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, Marcy said she would help. So, everybody there in Lakeland, Florida, March 15th, 10 o'clock, where is that going to be held now?
Well, I'll give the exact directions, to anybody that calls in, because it's going to be in a surrounding area. So we're going to have a meeting point, and I'll, give everybody the specifics when they call in or email or reach you on your on your posting.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
Good, good.
Well, thank you for calling in. We always welcome you to our show to keep us updated.
Did you want to share your contact information?
Yes, if you don't mind, I'll give everybody my contact information. So they can reach me by phone at 786-696-7816, and by email, it'll be addressed to my name, Barbara, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, dot Stone, S-T-O-N-E, dot USA, at gmail.com.
Okay.
BarbaraStone at gmail.com.
Barbara.stone.usa@gmail.com.
Oh, dot USA. Okay.
Okay. We got that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay. I won't take up any more of your time. I appreciate your inviting me to make this announcement, and thank you very, very much.
There you go.
You're
thank
welcome,
you.
Barbara.
Thank
you for
appreciate
joining
Barbara.
Us.
Appreciate Barbara. There you go. That's okay. So we let Barbara go. Thank you, Barbara, for coming on. We are going to – Hillary, do you have anything you want to add to that before we bring our guests on?
No. Let's get to our guests. If there's anything, you know, really, really imperative, I'll mention it at the end of the show. Thanks.
Okay, perfect. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. She is a multimillionaire from Cincinnati, Ohio. Bridget Davis, after 35 years and starting a business together, is divorcing her wealthy husband, who owns the second largest payday loan company in the country. The court process has been extremely corrupt, in her opinion, and unlawful. Bridget says he has spent 25 years giving political donations to both sides of the aisle. He gave huge financial support to our first judge for her reelection in 2020, and I believe, in return, he got a divorce proceeding that not only violated my rights, but desperately stripped me of my assets, subjected me to his complete control, the exact opposite of what the law requires. We desperately need reform. We need regulation to ensure that the law actually matters. Bridget has been in court for 3 years. Oh, my gosh. That's a long time to be in court. Don't you agree, Robin?
Comparatively. Not unusual, but
not
yes.
Not unusual, yes. So we are going to bring in on our guest right now. Bridget, you are live on air with Faceless Radio. How are you doing tonight?
Hello. Thank you for having me, Robin, Hillary, Luann. Happy
there
to be
you
here.
You're welcome. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I've got
so glad you are able to be here tonight.
Here again. Boy, I've been listening to your story, and it's a lot like the regular probate court. You know, you go into a court, they know your assets, you know. Horrifying treatment when you go in there and realize, gosh, I think I'm going to get some justice into a courtroom. And then you realize, oh, my God, this is just the worst situation I could ever be in my life. So why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners exactly what divorce court is like. Is it kind of similar to the probate courts and the regular family courts out there? You know,
what has been your experience with our courts?
Right. So, yes, I naively believed that justice and the law is actually what drives the court system, and I found out the total opposite. I think, unlike your previous guest, the crux of the problem in my court system all boils down to, well, I mean, the results are different than what hers are. That's horrifying. But it's all driven by money in both instances. I think the probate court, our court system is funneling just huge amounts of money. And then, now our marital asset and our marital portfolio, here you have an enormous amount to deal with. And he is very seasoned at political connections and political support and what have you. I mean, that's effectively what, he was driven to do throughout the entire inception and duration of the industry that our primary business was in. So we, in our entire marital portfolio, there are 87 entities. But as soon as, you know, I left the marriage, I was put at a disadvantage because I was, you know, he requested very desperately to me that he be the one, due to this high profile situation that we're in our city, in our town, that he file first. So I was totally naive. I had no idea. I'd never been to court in my entire life. So I said, sure, you know, because the assumption again was that courts are fair and the law is followed. So the law is equitable. So I have nothing to worry about. Well, that was not true. And from there, he filed. What needed to happen, I have learned since, is that my attorney, who I hired, has to file an answer for me, or a counter and a counterclaim to that filing. Well, that never happened. So it's very unusual. And in my opinion, it's not coincidental. And I had to go through six attorneys, not just one. You know, that could be overlooked as negligence, but then the second and the third. And I really didn't know what was wrong, why I was not being able to get in front of the judge, why all of the issues. He took my car. I was forced out of my home. He cut off all the credit cards. I had, you know, no income. All of that financial abuse and the control and the power play, all of that happened. And I kept looking to these attorneys and wondering, why am I not being given a stipend of our income, you know, an allocation of our money? That's what the law requires. Well, it's because they were not doing what they were supposed to be doing. And it was all under the, you know, the judge that was on our case at the time had previously had a relationship, a work relationship somewhat, because she used to be, before she was appointed to the family court bench, she served as the head of the Board of Elections for the Republican Party in Cincinnati. And my husband, if he wasn't the largest donor, he certainly was top three. So she came to him often and regularly to support new candidates or someone else's, you know, reelection, what have you. So they knew one another. That alone, per the rules, should have required her not to preside over our case. Then she was up for reelection in the year that we were divorcing, and she was presiding. And I started posting all of my evidence of all of this on TikTok, and I started posting the evidence that my husband, I believe, has made huge contributions to her reelection campaign. And I also did sort of a money trail through friends and neighbors and, you know, people he knows. So all of that, you see where that leads. So then I have suddenly, you know, suspiciously local attorneys. Some of them charge upwards of $800 an hour. These are not newbies. These are seasoned family law attorneys, you know, some of the top names in our city, and they're not filing the most fundamental necessary answer to a divorce claim, which actually left me vulnerable to a negligent, you know, I mean, to just be unable to be given or awarded anything in our asset and, you know, property division. So once I got, you know, started catching on, you know, I started coming out of the fog of believing in the system, and I started saying, wow, this is just, you know, this is not possible. How is this gone on for 2 years and I can't get any kind of justice? So I thought, for sure, they kept quitting. These attorneys would just quit for no reason. And then I would go to try to pick up my file and they would tell me, no, you can't have it. Not until you sign this document that we want you to sign. So there was a lot of extortion, trying to force me to sign things that, of course, behooved and benefited my husband, big protective orders, things like that. The overarching drive was to make sure that there was zero information leaked about the company. The company is a political hot potato, to say the least. So, you know, very protective of that. But this is all happening from my side, my advocate. So I started questioning, well, maybe I need somebody who's outside of his reach. Well, I found out that even in a whole nother city in our state, I still didn't go far enough outside of his political reach. And I am now, just now, retained my eighth attorney, but it took seven attorneys and 2 years into the case for an attorney to actually file an answer and counterclaim. That left me ineligible. You know, our first judge made several unlawful rulings. We have what's called a 75N law, and that is the law that governs that two people who are divorcing are to be given an equitable allocation of funds to pay for, have autonomy in their legal professional. That didn't happen for me. Judge Searcy, the first judge that he knew and supported, ordered that all of my attorneys be paid and my husband receive their invoices. So he was effectively their client, not me. So maybe that's why they forgot to file me into the case. I'm not sure, but it seems suspect, and at the very least, it's very conflicted. So that still stands. Any attorney that I hire, my husband pays. My husband sees their invoice. My husband knows when they speak to me. If they put details in their invoice about what we discussed, he sees that. That should be privileged information. That alone is, you know, not allowed. So there have you. They forced me to, well, like I said, I don't have a home. I have a small, I don't have a court ordered or a lawful allocation of our income. I have whatever, you know, my husband wants to pay me when he wants to pay it. If he wants to pay, you know, he's supposed to be ordered to pay all of our expenses and my legal bills, but when I pay them so that I can, like this last attorney, I paid his retainer, I paid him, I submitted to my husband's personal accountant, please reimburse me as the court has ordered, and he does not. So he gets to pick and choose when, you know, I have no power, and this court has allowed him to control me, and I had to go through a trial, a six-day trial. They would not allow me a new attorney. I had to wait until after the trial, and then I retained someone for the appeal. But I represented myself. Each day, I went in and said I would like a continuance so that I might get an attorney and have legal counsel. Denied. And I'm pretty sure that the Constitution affords us the right to have, at the very least, you know, a legal professional. I don't know what I'm doing, especially in a matter of this magnitude. They didn't allow me a forensic accountant. There was not mandatory disclosure met. There was not discovery because, like I said, I believe the whole purpose was to make sure there were no outside eyes that saw any of the company financials, which I am lawfully, you know, allowed and entitled to. So I was stripped of that. So I sat through a six-day trial where my husband and his attorney effectively just put on a show and tell. It was obviously not a real trial because there was only one side, and he was not required to present expert testimony to each of the values that he gave for anything. So he pretty much went in and said, hey, we have this. That's how it appeared to me. This is what we have. This is what you can decide from. And this is what, you know, I suggest that you give her. And the suggestion And the offer made to me was, of course, that he retained control of me in the way of, you can continue to have a monthly stipend pretty much for the rest of my life. And that's the settlement. So now all of a sudden, that's what was presented to the court in a way like, we don't have the decision yet, so I don't know what the court is going to do, but there was not a two-way trial. You know, why have the trial? It was all theater. And my experience has been all along the way, whatever and whenever they can use procedure to try to bring you to your knees, you know, that's the point of the financial starvation. They do it in courtrooms all over this country. Predominantly, I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess it's to the women, but I'm not, you know, I don't have statistics, so I don't know. But if you can cripple someone financially, well, how can they keep fighting? They can't. And so they have to walk away from their life, from all that they've helped to build. And I am unwilling to do that because, and, you know, not that I am any more deserving than anyone else who gets stripped of what they've worked for, but I know I stood there. I opened that first store. I drove the Ryder truck. I, you know, helped do all the build out. I was a teller. I forgave loans to people. I know what I did. And soon after the company started expanding, even my husband left the company. He didn't work there. It became an investment that we owned for the past more than 20 years. I get often a lot of backlash, and mostly from males that are like, you know, if he built the company and you didn't work there, then you don't deserve it. First of all, that's not the law. And second of all, I did, you know, equal my 50% in helping to build what we have in support, advice. You know, anytime we had an investment decision to make, we consulted each other, one another, and the decision was made jointly. He has no more entitlement to any of that than I. And I personally would like the law to be followed because I have a strong need and desire to put that money to good use, to not use that money for purposes of purchasing power and wielding influence. I would love to see that money go back into the community and first and foremost into a nonprofit organization that may expose these courts, help have learned advocates for people out there who, like myself, naively walk into the courtroom unprepared and unknowing of how the inner workings truly are. So I know I'm monologuing, and I'm sorry. I just wanted to get it all out there in a broad, and now I'll let you all talk.
Well, I think Bridget, you explained it very well. I mean, you went into the court thinking that you were probably going to get justice. You were probably, you know, going to get a divorce, and it was going to be, you know, it's going to be 50-50 or whatever they do nowadays, but you found yourself 3 years later into a courtroom where it's still going on. And it seems like your husband is like kind of running the show in the courtroom because, you know, he 100%. Has the money. Basically, it's probably how you're feeling, you know, and it's not right.
Well, so much so that if I asked anything, if I tried to inform myself and learn anything and walk into the courtroom in any way, try to defend my position, and I would ask the court a question they weren't anticipating from me, the magistrate literally locked eyes with my husband's attorney instantaneously. You know, one question was I asked for her bond information. That's how, you know, inappropriate all of these rulings are. Hearings are happening that are supposed to be, per the civil rules, recorded. I asked for the recordings. Oh, they weren't recorded, yet I had recorded them myself because I quickly, like I told you, caught on to what was really going down. So they, in my opinion, conveniently did not record when they knew that they would be overreaching or saying something inappropriate, unlawful, that could amount to misconduct, what have you. And I started posting those hearings on TikTok, but I asked for her bond information, and she immediately looks over to opposing counsel to where I said, why do you keep, you know, excuse me, Your Honor, why do you keep looking to opposing counsel to answer my question? And, you know, first my husband's attorney would respond, and then the magistrate would parrot back what she just had answered. So, yes, it felt entirely like my husband's camp was driving this show. And whatever he and whatever he wanted and what information he wanted responded, that's the answer I got. But they put me in that untenable position, mind you. I had no legal advocate. I was not allowed, time to kind of find the needle in the haystack, which is the person, you know, these attorneys are also then, think about this. They are put into a kind of a pickle because if you have a court that has come to a decision prior to any proceeding going on and, you know, the signals are out. If you have a court, for example, let's hypothetically say that this judge that my husband knew and contributed to, I believe, if she had possibly even suggested, hey, this woman will be fine. And we're just going to get this off my docket. I'm not interested in this clogging up the courtroom. And so I need your assistance. I'd like you, you know, basically just to stand down. Hypothetically, I have no evidence of that. But it seems to me that these very competent attorneys that, you know, within six of them, somebody would have known, hey, that's what I learned in law school. First thing, I better file my client into this case and protect their interests. But that didn't happen. So it seemed to me orchestrated. And, you know, when that happens from the court, what is an attorney to do? They have to make a living in that court and in front of that judge or magistrate. So they're then, you know, in the hot seat. Then they become sort of the victim, not sort of, in a large part they do. And if they choose to sort of expose some of the behind the scenes, there's one attorney that just was put on leave, and I posted this article in Ohio and Kentucky because he, you know, threatened to say, I'm going to blow this all up. I'm going to out these attorneys for the misconduct. So, yeah, they're trying to, I mean, the article alluded that he may be disbarred. You know, he's put on leave now. He can't be a practicing attorney. Mm-hmm. So they go after them, anybody. They've already stripped me of what I worked my entire life for. So there's no law degree that they can hold over my head. So I'm speaking out. But, you know, I think it's important to know that, you know, my case has been comical and not at all lawful in my opinion. And I feel I have more than enough proof and evidence of that. But there's hundreds of thousands of, I mean, it's almost like a daily occurrence. And then when you get into, it's not just property and money. They do these decisions, this abuse of power where children are involved. And like your previous guest said, lives of the elderly, the truly vulnerable in the society. So yes, I think I'm here mostly because, and I will continue to, this has sparked a real passion in me. I'm going to try to continue to advocate for change and at least, you know, a spotlight and to expose that our courts are not operating as they should. And so there should be, you know, new legislation or new regulation or something needs to happen, that something needs to give, because this is unbridled power. It's completely unchecked. And, you know, in every other arm of our government, it gets abused. Why are we not paying attention to the abuse in the courts?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you. Go ahead, Robin.
I was thinking as you were speaking, you're saying our courts are not operating as they should, and what the way that your case played out, it was all apparently orchestrated by a single party. That is your ex-husband or your husband. I'm not sure if all that's gone through, but that individual was holding the strings, it would seem, like marionettes on all of the different parties involved. And that happened because of the money trail that allowed that person to be in control of this. This judge that you're appearing before is beholden to those individuals who contribute to allow them to be a judge. So if your husband is this major donor to their campaign, well, that's a conflict of interest that ought to cause them to say, you know what, I'm going to have to recuse myself from this case because I'm too involved, because I've already decided I can't go against that guy. So put them in the position where they didn't feel they could do that because they're under the thumb, under the control. They're on the marionette strings.
Right.
That means if I were to do that, then next time I need that money, it's not going to be forthcoming. But if I play ball with the way this person wants, then I'll be able to continue to be a judge because they'll continue to finance my campaigns and I'll continue to get elected. And so here you have the perfect example of how organized crime can gain control in a courtroom. And really, I'm using this as an example, but we see this oftentimes where courts operate based on the the more powerful financial individual coming to court and manipulating the court to achieve their ends. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be the person with more money. It can also just be the person that's better connected, let's say, because you'll have a group of attorneys, all of whom know each other and all of whom are accustomed to working together in a court, and one of whom is dressed in a black robe and therefore is now a judge. And it's a good old boys, you know, it's not only men. There are women judges that are just as bad or worse than many of the men out there. But we all know what a good old boys club is, so I use that term rather loosely. But it's a situation where you have a group of people that have come together, and they, when they get up to no good, they discover to their delight that there is no oversight. There's no one overseeing what they're doing. There's no one. There's no second guessing. There, you can take a judge before a review committee, and the review committee will simply rubber stamp everything that judge says and does 99.9 times out of 100.
Nice.
And say everything's fine as far as we can tell. That judge hasn't done a darn thing wrong. And they can violate the rights of the people before them. They can violate the laws that are in the books right in their own courtroom that they're supposed to be following. They can violate their oath that they take when they become a judge,
right.
And there are no consequences at all. They get away with everything, including ultimately sanctioning murder in many cases,
yeah.
Because you know people that go under a guardianship are often murdered.
Mm-hmm.
That's not unusual at all. It's rather typical, sadly.
And explain how they're murdered, because a lot of these cases, like in a guardianship case, these people don't have any say-so. So if a relative comes up to them and says, you know, I want my parent not put into hospice, and all of a sudden they're put into hospice, that to me is being called murder.
Well, yeah.
You know, in a way.
Let me put it this way. If I were to do what they do, which is to take someone against their will,
mm-hmm.
rob them of their identity, go to then banks and other companies and around telling everyone, I am in charge of this person. They don't go to them, come to me. And I now own all of their assets. Mm-hmm. I now
own them.
It's all what it amounts to. It's human trafficking.
Right. I now own them.
You will answer to me for everything involved with them, including going to the people that are involved in caretaking that individual. And this is exactly how they're killed. Go to the caretakers and say, I am signing a do not resuscitate for this individual. And whether they want it or not, oftentimes they do not. Most people are not in a rush to end their own lives. But sometimes it's the other way around, and they'll keep them alive against their own will. But usually it's against their will. They're given a do not resuscitate order, and then drugged to insensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they are insensible and they, you know, can't defend themselves, even if you were to get through to them, now they're isolated, so no one can get through to them except the carefully chosen individuals that guardian who's making sure that cash cow, that asset that they now control, is paying off to all of the people that are caring for them and to the guardian and to the circle of attorneys that's defending them. Then once they've got that individual drugged up and they've exhausted all of the resources and it gets to the point where that individual begins to be a little bit of a liability because there's too much uproar
around them
or there's or they're the more high-value individual that could be put into whatever bed they're occupying, whatever the reason, then they just make a phone call to hospice and say, it's time to bring in the big guns. And by big guns, I mean large needles full of Haldol and drugs that will further incapacitate them, opiates that will very quickly end their lives. And, of course, they don't even need the drugs because they can simply say that person is no longer going to eat anything. That person is no longer going to drink anything. And on top of that, let's go ahead and fill them full of these drugs that is the lethal dose.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about when I say they kill them.
Yeah.
Now, that's not involved in this case so far.
Yeah, and that's something.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
Well, they did, actually. Sorry to interrupt. They weren't going to drug me, I don't believe, and, you know, murder me. But this judge, when my last, you know, local attorney that hadn't filed an answering counterclaim and I kept trying to fight and file, that person quit. And I had suggested at the time, knowing that this wasn't going right, and I knew that my husband had contributed to this judge, so I started doing research, and I said to my attorney, hey, there's this avenue through the Ohio Constitution that I can file an affidavit of disqualification directly to the Ohio Supreme Court. I would like to do that. And she said to me, what? No, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure what you're talking about. If you want the judge recused, you have to file and ask the judge herself straight to her. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. That doesn't make any sense. If I believe her to be biased and prejudiced, I'm not asking her. So I, you know, wrote it myself. It took me 2 weeks, and I included a whole bunch of, you know, canceled checks printed out from our, I asked for all 5 years of canceled checks from our checking account, what have you, and showed the money trail and submitted that to the Ohio Supreme Court, and instantly she recused. But prior to that, this is the ruling that made me know, okay, something is nuts. I told them I wanted to file that. They immediately said, if you don't do it our way and file it to the judge, then we quit. And this was the day before my scheduled hearing to get temporary support, which is an allocation of our income, so that I was financially autonomous and able to stand on my own. monetarily. So I had to represent myself. I wasn't going to, you know, I waited 3 months for this hearing. So I showed up the next morning, and lo and behold, you know, from the bench, this same judge basically says, if you, you know, your behavior and having all of these that I know to be competent attorneys, even though it's their incompetence, mind you, that allowed her to say, you're not eligible to get temporary support because the proper motion wasn't filed. That's what she ruled from the bench. I'm not going to order temporary support for you because the correct motion wasn't filed. And you tried to file one pro se and you filed it incorrectly. And if you, since all these attorneys now, you know, have come and gone, even though they quit, if you try to go pro se, which I have a legal right to do, any of us do, then I'm ordering you to undergo a psychological evaluation in order to proceed pro se. So that further my assumption and my belief that this was orchestrated, because whom do they need to continue to use the known procedure to, you know, nullify my interest? They need me to have an attorney. And if I didn't have that attorney, they needed me not to have a voice to the court. So at that moment, I was effectively put in what I call a quasi-conservatorship inside that courtroom. I no longer, as a pro se litigant, had a equal voice to that judge. Well, I did file the affidavit, and she immediately recused. So, but then, you know, the nonsense continued in this courthouse because the next judge covers for that judge. You know, I filed, let's relook at some of her decisions, Your Honor. Oh, no, they're all stand. They all stand. Oh, I still have to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. Why? For what? You know, I mean, this is a breaking of a contract. I'm not in charge of it. Our children are all grown. That was kind of a violation of my civil rights. There's nothing wrong with me.
And, so let's go back a little bit. Bridget, let's go back a little bit here. Did you say that they needed a psychiatric evaluation from you?
She ordered that I undergo one if I wanted to keep representing. Well, I didn't follow that order. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Oh, well, because she said, I'm going to order you to undergo this, and I wanted to be with Dr. So-and-so, and she named the doctor. So, you know, I'm thinking to myself, set up.
That's in. Yeah. I'm going to say the
thing. You know, like, I think you already know what Dr. Ed So-and-so is going to say, so I don't think I'm going to go see him.
Yeah. And,
right.
You know,
then,
I was talking to Hillary before, and Hillary, you can come in and talk about this a little bit, that we talk a lot about the divorce courts on how they're really parallel to the guardianship cases because they keep you in the court as long as you can, draining your assets, you know, and one person usually runs the whole show. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, and you were telling me that a lot of families going through a guardianship or they're going through a divorce court or they're going through a divorce court and get a guardianship opposed, right? Like the Earl Haas family?
Right. Well, we have a case where the parents, you know, the child was total care. There's a large settlement and they went into court and the judge said, well, we cannot split Omar, you know, in half, so we'll just appoint a for-profit professional guardian, and of course, who's, you know, bleeding the estate dry, visitations are cut off, and there is a huge parallel, and, you know, it's one thing about COVID that we all have to admit, which is really, really awesome, phenomenal, are the Zoom, you know, Microsoft Teams, whatever the hearing is that normally when you're in court, and I had never been in court before either until guardianship, is that now we can look at the judge and we can also look at the attorney's face. And it is so true. I mean, it's almost like they're making some of these judges, they're making love to the bad attorney. It's like, oh my God, am I really seeing this? Time and time again, shaking their head in agreement with the attorney. And as far as, you know, medical or psychological examinations, I know quite a few people in guardianship proceedings that the judges said, well, you know, in order to proceed, you'll need to get a psychological evaluation. You'll have to surrender your guns. There's been no threats of violence or anything of that sort. And we have Doug Keegan, and he is in criminal court because he threatened the guardian's attorney. And in criminal court, there's a Feretta hearing, which is, of course, in front of the judge, who is definitely not impartial, to see if you are able and competent enough to represent yourself. But again, just trying to shine a little bit of humor in a very dark situation is, you know, these so-called doctors, and some of them are, I mean, they're laughable. The doctor who assessed my father, who was the doctor on the committee, was a gynecologist who spent his entire career looking at vaginas. And here he has the power to take away all of a person's rights, which is what they always do. You know, okay, it's a limited guardianship. You retain the right to vote, you know. So I'm with you 100% that it is, and we all, every single one of us, we never went into court thinking anything but it would be fair. It wouldn't be one-sided. The judge would hear the testimony, and he or she would make the right decision. But that is
right, and you know,
so
that's not happening anymore, Hillary. You go into court, they're not fair at all. I mean, it's
not
like they don't let you speak. And in my family's case, they wouldn't let us speak at all in court. The attorneys ruled everything, and the judges gave everything to a public administrator. Everything we owned, all of our properties, everything we had. And you go in there thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be so fair, and it's just, I was in shock. I mean, I literally left the courtroom in shock, so I understand exactly how Bridget feels. You're going into a courtroom, and all of a sudden, these are not fair courtrooms anymore.
No, and you know, whether it's divorce court or, you know, guardianship court, and I won't rehash what we already know, that it is stage litigation. It is bleeding the state. We have my friend, Get a Minus columnist, and I do credit him for, as well as Robin and Luann, for me being an advocate full-time. He was accused of exploitation of the elderly, undue influence. His aunt was put into a guardianship on a petition from a realtor and a guardian who was later arrested for exploitation of the elderly. His father died when he received the petition. His aunt died alone of COVID-19. And finally, 2 weeks ago, the judge in Pinellas County and the players, so to speak, they agreed to a settlement. 5 years. 5 years. To call someone a terrorist is a huge statement. But these people, they are homegrown terrorists, because they terrorized Getty, his wife, his aunt, and his family in Lithuania. 5 years later, finally, they knew they couldn't do anything more, you know, bleeding the estate-wise, and they settled. It's criminal. And family court, divorce court, and guardianship court, they're identical to me for the most part. So but I give you a lot of credit, you know. For getting a judge recused is like the hitting the lottery. It really doesn't happen much.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
Thank you. Yeah. But here's what shocks me, okay? So everybody has their own individual story, and they're each as equally horrifying to the next when you actually, you know, juxtapose them up against what the laws are. So I'm sitting here scratching my head going, why isn't it general knowledge? You know, why don't the people regularly know that the courts are kind of a joke? You know, it's not lawful. At the very, you know, now I'm trying to find someone who says, oh, yeah, my judge was very fair. And,
You know, it was extremely equitable. I'm trying to find that guy. I can't. You know, so why don't... What?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of one. Have we heard of some? There was a couple.
Right. Most of them are. This is how it is. And so, you know, I'm going, now, wait a minute. I know why they're all motivated to keep it on the down low, right? This is how... But they have to be trying to keep up the optics somewhat, or we all would be going, well, I mean, court, you know, shouldn't we all sort of come together and collectively with all of this and all these stories, we just need to plan a march to Washington. I mean, we just need to get down there and say, look, you can't give a judge a get-out-of-jail-free card. You cannot say you have total immunity. They have to be held responsible for some of these outrageous decisions, okay? It can't be, just like everything is on a sliding scale and there's a spectrum, right? They want to say, well, I'm not going to put myself at risk and make a decision then if I can be punished for it. Well, you're the guy that supposedly studied the law, and that's why you're sitting in that chair. I'm sure we would still find people that would want that power and prestige, and hopefully the good guys that want to actually make sure that justice is served. But only the outrageous ones. You know, there have to be decisions that these judges, you know what? You have gone too far. You literally sentenced that person to death, or you literally stripped that child and they have been suffered, you know, sex trafficking or all these other horrific. Well, your last guest, Elizabeth Harding Weinstein,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I am hard pressed to find and hear another story more horrifying. I can't even wrap my brain around what her very powerful attorney husband has been able to do to her and to her children in separating them. So that, you know, the long-term psychological, emotional damage to families, people, individuals, that kind of thing, yeah, you should be held accountable. Those are crimes, in my opinion, flat out. You know, as the day is long, that judge needs to be held to account. And you can't say your little fraternity are the people that get to decide your punishment. You know, anyone in the bar, it's like, we'll just pass all the money around to each other to make sure that nobody, I actually had one of my attorneys because I was so, you know, constantly going, wait a minute, this is not right and that's not right. And finally, you know, it was almost like he was gloating, looked at me and said, Bridget, if you're asking me if the system is set up to support, to protect itself, the answer is yes. You know, in other words, the more grievances I file, the more letters I'm going to get back. There's no there. There's really nothing there. And
well,
the
give
more
you a
I
lot
think
of
about what was
going in there yourself, Bridget, I give you a lot of credit for you going in there yourself and all this. I mean, that's it's kind of like, you kind of remind me of a little bit of Elizabeth Weinstein that was on our show last week. And she says, you know, I'm just not taking this anymore. I'm just going to go in there and do this. And I just think it's so unfair. And I think that you two have a lot in common, you know, going into divorce court and ending up in this. Right now we are going to, I say that in the next few minutes, we're going to be taking in callers to come onto our show live. And the number that you call into to do that is, it depends, oh, I'll wait a second, is 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962. You press a 1. That will let me know that you have a question or a comment. I'm live on the air. You don't have to give out your name. Whatever you feel okay with, you can do that. So we'll be doing that here in a few minutes. So you say that you had children. Are they all grown now?
Yes, thank goodness. So the first time I left, wanted to leave my marriage, they were not. And my youngest was 3 at the time. And I specifically remember something that my husband said to me. And so I, you know, thought better of that idea at the time because, and now in hindsight, I could not, you know, I literally, that's the top of my gratitude list every day. Thank you, God, for giving me the strength to be in a place that was completely unhealthy for me, but for the sake of my children, because the power and control he's had through this court, those kids would be stripped from me. They would
right.
have been denied me as a parent and a mother in their lives. And I'm just so grateful that something made me, you know, well, like I said, it was something that he said. And so I know I made the right decision because there, but for God, I would be Elizabeth and I would be talking to you about how I haven't spoken to my kids. And I don't know, I couldn't have survived that. I can sit in that courtroom
right.
and watch their theater and listen to them bully me and psychologically abuse me, but I could not allow someone to steal my kids. I would
you
die.
Know,
and so
and
my heart.
Yeah. And having her on our show
her.
Last week just showed, you know, it opened my eyes a lot about being a mother and how it would be to be, have your kids stripped for you, how hard that has to be. That's like having your parents abducted from you. That's the same kind of what is it, using them as a weapon, you know, against
right.
that person. And you and she gave birth along with her husband. I mean, not saying that the husband delivered, but they all were in this together. Everything should be 50-50. The kids should be 50. The money should be 50. It should all be 50-50. But in many of these court cases, it is not. And more than likely, the women are being pushed off to the side, and the husbands are getting the kids, and they're keeping them away from the mothers. And I think that's so disrespectful to the children, to the mother, all of that. I think it's just criminal, in my opinion, that they should be doing this to children. I, you know, and not
well,
to mention
the
wife. No, go ahead.
The thing that happens, like I said, the damage that I see is to these children, and then. You know, in large part, I know Elizabeth believes her husband to be, you know, have a personality disorder. I know that we went to therapy and there was a therapist that diagnosed my husband with a personality disorder. So those are the people that do and seek this kind of treatment and use the court as a weapon. But then what does that create? If you strip those kids and cause them that emotional trauma, you are just asking for the possibility of more personality disordered adults to be walking around through society. It's like, you know, do they not get this? And they are the people sitting on their throne saying, you, I think you're crazy or you're mental or you, you know, well, if you're competent enough and you have, you know, the wherewithal to discern whether or not someone is struggling mentally, then you certainly can understand that when a child has such extreme emotional trauma in their life, like, well, especially sexually abused, but any kind of, you know, emotional abuse, that's what happens. And then they grow up and they are not well functioning adults. They cause more pain and evil and heartache. And so it makes no sense to me that we allow these courts this kind of power. Yes, I think.
Yeah, and I do think, Bridget, that a lot of this going into courts like that is these attorneys that are taking advantage of the court system for their paychecks. I think. And, you know, and in probate court, it's just not about the guardianship abuse. It is the whole complete probate system. The whole probate system, in my opinion, needs to abolish. I also think that going through a divorce, you should be able to get in there, get a divorce. It should be done within no longer equal rights, taking care of the children together, whatever it takes. But the society we have nowadays, these courtrooms are not operating as they should, period. You know, we can't say that any better
right.
than that. So let's go ahead and do this. Let's go ahead and bring in some callers. We're going to bring in a 270 number, if that's all right with you. Are we ready for this?
We're ready, right?
Thanks, ma'am.
Okay. We're going to bring in a... Yeah, there we go.
Hi,
we're going to bring in a 270 number.
How are you all tonight?
Oh, good.
Hey,
yes,
welcome to the show.
Welcome.
I was listening to the guest tonight, and she had mentioned, or what crossed my mind is if perhaps she doesn't, she seems like she still has friends and people that support system type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a way to get like well-funded and happily married women, men, couples, anybody across the land to start in like an impenetrable and almost an absolutely transparent group, I don't know what you would call it, that publicly lay out the injustices and corruption in courts as well as a rock-solid legal recourse,
mm-hmm.
just to bear in mind that one day it could be them as well. Right? They might be happy and well-funded right now, but something could happen, and it could be them in the same boat, powerless to stop it. Does that make sense? Like, they might be happily, you know, but and maybe they never have a problem, but just knowing that anybody that does can go to this group and say, hey, this is happening, and the group, whatever you would call it, would, mm-hmm. and I would love that for the probate system as well, for all the corruption there, because one day it could be any of us in either family court, probate court, on down the line.
Right, and you know, at every time, I agree with you 100%, and one time I was dragged into divorce court. I was dragged into divorce court, I don't know, 20-some years ago when my husband became mentally ill, Mike,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up probate court. They were, I mean, not probate court, but divorce court. And through all that, they realized that he was mentally ill, and I ended up getting guardianship of my own husband back then. So I've been in guardianship of my husband and of my mother. So I understand how the divorce courts work and how they were going after to sell our home, you know, to start paying for some of these bills. And I'm like, this isn't right. And then before you know it, I talked to all these attorneys, found out that my husband was just not able to file for divorce, and they withdrew the petition, which is, thank God, I had to turn the whole situation around. But back then, the courts weren't as corrupt as they were now.
Right.
I mean, that was like 20,
right, 'cause things were,
it's been
still
gone 16 years.
Law.
Yeah. But I sit back and think about what happened if my husband would have filed for a divorce now. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I know now. This would be just horrible. You know, and that happened
sure.
like 25 years ago. Something 20
And it sounds
I can't
like
remember.
To me the guests on tonight and then the guests last week, you know, they're in a whole different group of people that we're not, you know, most people aren't in, and it's not exactly easy being that group of people. But it sounds like she could be a squeaky wheel, and also I don't want to sound crazy, but I'm sure it's crossed her mind that, you know, like no harm has come to her, and I'm really glad for that. But they don't want that because they don't want the heat from that, because it's not like she could just disappear. People would miss her. So instead
right.
of doing that, they're trying to assassinate her character maybe and erase her, just make her not exist, take her voice and everything away from her.
100%. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
They have done that. And he, you know, maligns me with accusations of adultery, you know, that I cheated, which I did not. And so, but yes, that's what they have to
Is
go
that the
to.
Best
oh,
you can do? That's terrible. Like,
that's
yeah.
the best you can do.
So
well,
mad.
I don't.
Yeah,
I
hold
don't.
On.
Well, I had to cross-examine him.
I'm
and
sorry.
He was
How humiliating.
I taped this, but, you know, I said, you keep accusing me of committing adultery, and do you have any evidence of this? Do you have a text? Do you have, you know,
mm-hmm.
an email, a photo, anything? No, nothing. So it's just, that's what I need to say in sworn affidavits. So anyone who looks at our docket then says, oh, she's this seedy, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm not. And it wouldn't matter anyway, because Ohio is a no-fault state. So it doesn't, it shouldn't matter to the court as far as the law application. But yes, they do try to, you know, malign your character and all kinds. But he couldn't go to any kind of drug or alcohol use. I haven't drank a drop since I was 25 years old, you know, and I don't use recreational drugs. I don't go out. I did nothing but my kids for 25 years, you know. So it's interesting. But they do that. And there are people that are constantly telling me, you know, look in your rearview mirror, because I'm not going to stop saying what my experience is. And they, you know, my husband's attorney went into the courtroom and showed some of my TikToks and was like, did you say this? You know, they're going to have to kill me if they want me to shut up. And I said, yes, I did. Because
good job.
That's the truth. I mean, I really hope you don't kill me, but I don't want to die. I want to be here for my kids. But this is so important, and there are people dying because people are cashing in on their, you know, demise and treating them not like human souls and human beings with lives and loved ones. And there needs to be awareness to be, and exactly what you're saying, there needs to be an advocate for people to, you know, who aren't even, who are unsuspecting and not even thinking about this problem right now. But,
and
you know, they'll be aware of it.
Still, the people that are still in their happy place in their life, they still have access to their bank accounts. They could do something. They could, if they could hear, like if they hear our voices, anybody that could realize that they could turn the tide for everyone. Just by, you know, because unfortunately, I'm sure it does take money. It doesn't, I mean, everybody here on this, anybody that can hear our voices, we're good people, we're nice people. But unfortunately, that doesn't cut it in this world. We got to have fun.
That's why I want to get the money that belongs to me so we have some. So we can do good with it.
Yeah. Questions coming in also, and a lot of people want to know, are you going to hire another attorney or are you going to just go pro se all the way?
No, I did finally hire an attorney, and I did find one who seems to be very effective. He was, you know, this is the faith that I have in him. He was a prosecutor for 20 years. So he's well-versed in litigation, and it just says to me that he, you know, the law is very important to him and the application of the law. But having said that, I want to touch back on the attorneys, because I have a newfound friend through all of this, and she is on the other side, and she's actually waiting. She wants to come on and talk, but she is an attorney, a practicing attorney, and for them to rise up and try to expose the inner workings is really courageous, because they really do try to, you know, strip you of your career and your life, make an example out of you so that nobody wants to rise up and say, and there might be some good attorneys that are just like, oh, God, I you know, I don't want to say anything because then they'll come after me. Kind of thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, if there's time
that wants to come on and talk to us, that we welcome any great attorneys. We welcome, you know, any attorney that wants to come on to our radio show, or a judge, or legislators, and anybody. We've had quite a few of them on. We've had judges and attorneys and legislators all come on to our radio show, and we welcome them.
Make it on to this segment, I will be happy to give you her name and number, because you could do an entire show with just her. She has some attorneys and retired judges all talking about, you know, this problem from the inside too.
I would love for her to come and join our radio. So yes, I would love to have her information, and so we can talk to her. I mean, you know,
I think she's on hold right now.
Well, she's on. I'll tell her to press 1 and we'll bring her on, and we'll do a complete
press
radio show
one.
With her. Yeah, let's see.
Okay.
Yeah, tell her to press the 1, and then I can find her on our list. Hold on a second. Let's see what we have here. We do have a 270 number. Maybe that's her.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah, I think that's
okay.
There you are. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And what was your name now?
My name is Casey Powell. I'm an attorney in Kentucky as well as Illinois and an officer of the Supreme Court of the United States. And
oh,
all
wow.
the federal courts in between.
Oh, wow. So do you see this happening all the time?
Well, what I see is I have taken on cases. You know what? I was raised by fire and brimstone, and I was raised to not lie. So when I picked a career, I picked a career on the notion that, hey, this particular career is truth and justice, and I've been blindsided by the fact that truth and justice does not exist. It's an illusion. Justice especially is an illusion. It's a pay-for-play system, and I have been fighting them nonstop. I have been fighting them and trying to battling them back myself for decades, only to discover in the end, after I've exhausted all of my available resources and spent my own money for my clients' better good, the KBA, for an example, the Kentucky Bar Association, had turned the tables and started coming after me for bogus charges. So I know everyone thinks that all attorneys are fraudulent and corrupt, but that's not what it is. They beat us down, and there's far too many willing to actually jeopardize their career, their name, their livelihood. And I think that's something that's being overlooked by everyone. And it's kind of a hard thing to do.
Hear you.
Yeah.
And I understand what you're talking about. When we in Colorado, Luann and I went around when the Judicial
Performance Committee
went to towns all over Colorado for public hearings. We were able to attend 7, I believe, out of the 10 public hearings that they held. And at those hearings, we heard just in the 7 we were at. 3 different times we heard an attorney come forward and say they were not able to meaningfully do their job because there was too much of a threat from the judge that if they aggressively did the job of defending the interests of their client, that judge would simply basically blackball them. All their cases would be moved down in the docket.
Mm-hmm.
They would be ruled against no matter what the merits of the case were.
In my scenario, I took the case all the way to the Supreme Court of the United. I took one case to the Supreme Court of the United States, as well as, and that was for the protection of the American people. Here's the thing that people don't realize. The majority of people do not realize, and this saddens me the most, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with them not realizing this, because I personally did not until after I was an attorney. Does anyone know that the justice system polices itself? In my personal opinion, the justice system is the most powerful branch of government. We have 3 branches of government. We allow them to police itself. How does that make sense? Because they get to actually disclose or not disclose any information. They have complete power and control. And I've only discovered this simply by my job.
Wow.
Yeah, we've discovered the same thing, and it is dastardly.
But nobody's talking about it, The attorneys are too afraid to talk about it because they will actually ruin their livelihood. So I don't think all attorneys are bad. I just think that they're placed in a bad predicament, and that's one of the situations that we need to address and fix.
I agree with you. We've had quite a few attorneys on our show. I mean, we have Phil Ross. We have Lisa McCarty. We've had Leslie Federico. We've had... Oh, man, we could go on Sunny, you know, she came on to a radio show. Many of these attorneys are being scrutinized through the courts like these clients are. I mean, they're being pushed off the side as well.
It's a virtual assault.
We have a lot of
literally facing my own bar association charges just for speaking out and telling the truth. And all they want me to do, and it's a case that I've been on for 11 years. And for the last 3 years, it's literally been them trying to force me to say that I was wrong to and question their integrity.
Oh
well, I'm not sure when I gave up my First Amendment right. I really don't know, and I've asked them, but nobody will tell me. I'm going to question your integrity if you're going to commit fraud, absolutely. But that is something that most attorneys will not do.
Fight to the very last breath.
And the idea that you must recant is pure and simple witch hunt.
It absolutely is, but I just need to actually go ahead and say, Bridget is amazing. I have talked to her many times, and the fact that Bridget has actually, Bridget's Erin Brockovich. She's absolutely an Erin Brockovich. I've read her writing. She has done more research. She can do better than most attorneys I've ever come across. And I am an attorney, but I tell you what, I would take Bridget as my sidekick partner in any of it, any day.
You go.
Thank you.
The problem is the court system is not looking at her as an equal, and we have that all along the nation. You do not have an attorney to represent yourself. It's advisable, but you know what? Bridget's doing a far better job representing herself than any attorney she's going to get, especially the ones that are crooked and paid for.
Well said. That's well said for Bridget, I tell you. You know,
and I'm sure that it's true.
Yeah.
I think she is an extraordinary person in intelligence and ability.
Absolutely.
And also, in the way the system really works that has opened her eyes and given her a determination and a drive that is unparalleled, and that those things mean that she is certainly a formidable opponent, I'm quite certain. So I believe
absolutely.
That was,
and you said you were licensed in Illinois? Were you licensed in Illinois and where else?
Illinois and Kentucky, but I'm also a Supreme Court of the United States. I've taken cases on the behalf of the American people to the Supreme Court of the United States, and I'm also licensed in all the federal courts in Kentucky and in Illinois, and I can actually apply for reciprocity in various states because I've been a licensed attorney for a long time.
Wow. Well, God, I'm so glad you called in, and we'd love to do a regular radio show on you so people can bring questions, if you wouldn't mind, come on and be as one of our guests. I mean,
I would absolutely love to do that if Bridget comes with me, because you have success has actually given me motivation. You have no idea how much motivation she's giving me, because attorney, that our system is set against us. It's my career, and if I do something that they don't like, they can come after me and take away my bar exam. Then you have someone, they can take away my bar license. Then you have someone like Bridget who is coming on and basically rocking the show and telling things how it is. I'm envious of that. Absolutely. She's doing a wonderful job, and that should not be overlooked, and especially not told to get a mental health evaluation. That's just insane.
It's
insane.
I think that's been on every one of our attorneys that's come on to our show. Every single one of them has been ordered to do a mental evaluation. Even Retta Daniels, that was another one. There's another one up in Kentucky.
That definitely is a move in the playbook.
That's a move in the playbook.
That is not underused
right.
at all.
So
they pull that out of their bag of tricks every time somebody starts to make some progress in the court.
Right. Yeah.
Not only against substance abuse evaluation.
It's basically, if you're saying, I'm not willing to turn my will and my life over to this attorney who you do have influence and control of, if I want to exercise my own will and, you know, represent my own self, well, that's how they get control of you. You know, what we can't have that. We cannot have any person, a pro se litigant, you know, having any success whatsoever inside the courtroom, because then what happens? It takes the wind out of their, you know, money train. They can't, you know, people would go, wait a minute, I only have to fill this form out and, you know, I can know this, because the law, again, I think is very simple and straightforward. It's the procedure and the legalese and all the stuff inside the courtroom where they trip you up. You know, they know you don't know it. So that's the hold that they have. But if we simplify,
and most people don't know it, but Bridget does. Like,
no, I didn't know it, but I learned. You know, I had to learn.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope that that you just fight these people off of you, and you need to defend your career. You need to defend speaking up for people. You have the right as an attorney to defend your client. And I tell you what, they'd be glad I'm not an attorney, because I get there and tell them how it is. You know, because, you know, after telling these radio shows for this many years.
The system is not a friend of me.
Right. Yeah. And we definitely will get you back onto the show and talk about this, because I think that we need to go along with you as a good attorney, and that you're defending your rights like everybody else, but you have the right to do that, you know.
And bring Bridget with me, and I'm here every time.
Right.
No!
And a lot of people are afraid to come on, and some are not, and you're definitely one of those that are not to come out and speak about it. You're like Bridget, you know, come out and tell us what's going on, you know.
Absolutely. She gave me encouragement, and she didn't even know she did.
No, I know, but you didn't need much, because you had been doing it, and really, you're sitting in a much tougher spot than I. So I'm
the firecracker doing it on your own. You are absolutely the firecracker going about it on your own and not letting anyone stop you. That's amazing, and you should get all the support in the world for that. Everybody should actually recognize you're here to make a difference in the world. You're here to, you know, stop them from doing this to other people. That's phenomenal.
Right. Yeah, that's phenomenal.
I'm with you.
I'm with you, man. Right. We're gonna go ahead and keep you live on our radio. So we're gonna bring in another caller. It's a 616 number. Okay. So stay with us. Okay. Okay. 616. You have a question or a comment?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, yes, you're
welcome
on the air.
Welcome to the show. You're live on the air.
This is Holly from Michigan, and hopefully the attorneys can answer this question for me. Mm-hmm. But my question is to you, Mrs. Lou Ann Fleming.
Uh-huh.
Why did you feel it necessary to get guardianship of your husband?
Well, they actually made me do that. The court told me that his father turned into the conservator, so they said that at the time that my husband needed a guardian, and I'm like, well, isn't that the same thing as a wife? I mean, so the court said, well, if you have a guardian, you have to have a conservator, so they put me as the guardian. So I'm like, okay, what is it? What do I do exactly? And it's basically the same thing as me and wife, in my opinion.
Okay,
you take care of them.
This is a very serious question, because the next mm-hmm. question is, according to the laws, a wife and a husband can't even testify against each other. And then also there's the familiar laws, the right to live in your own household. So my question is, why or how did they force you to do guardianship? What was the purpose of doing guardianship on your husband?
My husband became extremely ill the last part of his life. He died 16 years ago. He ended up with some kind of brain damage. We're not sure exactly what happened to him. And so he had a lawsuit going on with where he used to work, and they awarded him like $100,000+. So the father became the conservator, wanted him to have a guardian. And I became his guardian.
But you're the wife. So what mm-hmm. is the purpose of doing guardianship when you are already the wife? Because a lot of guardianship, the professional
right.
guardians will force divorce to divide
no,
the
actually,
law.
You know, I don't even know why that happened back then, 20-some years ago, but I stepped up to the plate and said, well, the court, the attorneys said, you need to be the guardian. I said, fine. And that was all that was said. And it happened to be that my father-in-law was the ex-chief of a police of in Aurora. So they weren't going to mess around with him at all. You know, they weren't going to mess around with what happened.
You don't know why. They didn't say something like, you can't control medical.
No.
Because the HIPAA law came out in like 1996. And then later on in 2005. And what I'm getting to is a lot of people have no idea why they were forced to put their husband or wife or my daughter under guardianship. For the disabled population, they say it's because of HIPAA laws, you won't get medical care. And the more I'm looking in the HIPAA laws, I'm realizing that's not true. So I'm trying to figure out why 27 years ago or 16 years ago, why they were forcing you or anybody else that wants to the question, go on a guardianship when you are the wife and legal person in that household to take care of that person because you're the wife. And that is the familiar right.
So now they're telling everybody that the HIPAA laws declare that
you don't get medical services unless someone's, which I found out more and more, that's not a law that is under Department of Human Services that has nothing to do, or community mental health has nothing to do with any laws. The courts are just using it. So I'm just trying to figure out back then, why were they telling you to do guardianship?
Well, to tell you the truth, they gave me a guardianship also when there was a restraining order against me and him in a different state, and I also was the successor in another court. So I was like, and I was a victim in another one. So I don't, the whole thing, I would have to come on and do a whole complete radio show on all of that, exactly what happened to me 25 years ago. But
down to the statement is, why was it necessary for you to do guardianship?
Well, I wish I knew. I was his wife, and now I was his guardian. It's better than someone else doing it. You know, back then I had no idea that this would transform into something huge
The thing is, where did the laws go for familiar rights in a household, wife and husband still married?
I have no idea.
And the wife or husband. So maybe the attorneys can answer this, because where did it happen where all of a sudden, back then, it sounds like they just told you had to do that. The same thing they told me I had to do that with anybody over 18 who's disabled has to go on guardianship, because they say if you don't, then you don't get health care. I'm finding out that's not true, but they just tell you that. Any doctor's office, the secretary in the doctor's office would say the same thing. So I guess my question is, with these attorneys, the attorneys that are listening right now, because a lot of these guardianship cases with the husbands and wife, they are the one in Ohio with the physician and the wife, they're forced in divorce. Therefore, it's easier for them to take over stuff. So therefore, that means that those familiar laws are still intact, because they're forcing divorce with husbands and wives to take control over a husband and wife or one of the others. So maybe these attorneys that are listening right now maybe can answer that, because with me, Emily, it was over 18. It's a HIPAA law. You have to do this, which I'm finding, I'm looking more and more into it. I'm finding it's not a law. It has to do with community mental health and Department of Human Services. It has nothing to do with any law, period. It's not there. But
well, maybe
one
of the attorney.
Laws that don't even exist. Okay, sorry.
Well, Holly, let me go ahead and ask her this question. Okay, so do you have an answer? I mean, was it your name was Casey, wasn't it?
Casey, is she still on?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Casey, and at various times for many years, I did do guardianship laws. And I'm not really sure if I completely understand your question, but in the state of Kentucky, what we would do is somebody would come in, whether it be a family member or someone concerned about someone who didn't have a lot of family, they would come in, and our courts would actually have three different evaluations on that person. What I found in those particular cases, more than anything, it would be several family members that wanted control over the particular person, and then they would have to do three different evaluations, psychological evaluation, a mental health one, and another, just a doctor visit, and they would all have to agree that that particular person needed a guardianship. And that guardianship could extend from anything like having no rights to literally having rights limited to no voting rights or no making checks rights. It wasn't always distinguished all rights. So if I understand your question correctly, you were saying how could they force a spouse to have guardianship over another spouse?
Yeah. Right.
Well, I've got two questions here. One is,
okay,
how can they force a divorce and say that a spouse or that a spouse needs to take guardianship over a spouse? My second one is for the disabled population, someone who's over the age of 18, when it's your kid, saying
that you have to take guardianship
because of health care stipulations. What is the purpose, because they're claiming it's a HIPAA law.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the money factor out. Okay, we're talking about a disabled person. What's the purpose of doing guardianship over anybody except for a HIPAA law for health care?
Okay, so I'm gonna take your question as I think I actually understood them. I have personally in my life have actually recommended guardianships over kids that are 18 or getting to turn 18. And these would be kids that are autistic or a spectrum somewhere that we know after, you know, a lifetime of conditions, after doctors, they still have to go through the same three doctor examinations that we know that they're not going to be capable of living by themselves. So here's the problem. Some of these times, these kids are 18 years old, and they 18, 19. They may get with the wrong crowd. They may be easily influenced because they may be on the spectrum or they could be somewhere else. But at the same time, they're easily influenced, and we need to get that established early on. Parents do know when their kids are easily influenced. That needs to be established early on. So if there's any kind of criminal activity, we need to be able to actually keep them out of jail. And a lot of times people will fall into this category, but at the same time still be legally able to vote. We know all about kids that are 18 but are so easily influenced. They may steal, they may rob, they may do things that they normally would not have done if people were not putting things in their head. And if you get it established by doctors that shows that they are easily influenced early on, and you already know in your heart of hearts that they're not ever going to be able to live by themselves independently, it's the best thing to do.
Right.
Why?
Did that answer that question?
Well, I'm 100% in disagreement with you because you're on a very slippery slope, and it's very subjective.
Right.
But that has nothing to do with my daughter, because my daughter is extremely disabled. And she can't walk, she can't talk, she can't do anything. So that's not anything to do with anything, and my story is a little bit different. But
understandable.
But I am 100% in disagreement with putting someone under guardianship because you think they may or may not, because it is not a protection against the law. They just basically take them, throw them in a group home, and take guardianship away from the parent. That's what's happening
I'm not disagreeing with that. Absolutely not. My understanding of the question and my misunderstanding apparently was I encourage parents to get guardianships to keep outsiders from taking advantage of them. I do not encourage the parents to get guardianships of minors in order to put them in a group home. That was not my intention. I'm sorry if I came across that way. But it definitely wasn't my intention.
This is 18 and
you know
over.
What
I'm
we're
talking to
do? What we're going to do right now is that we're. I think what we're going to do is bring Case back on the on our radio show so we can go into further talking about what is the appropriate action to do if you are put into a situation like that. And Holly, I do want you to come back and I want you to talk to her a little bit more about this because I think this is a really important topic, you know, for people to understand what rights you have if you have a disabled child. What can the courts do and what should they not be doing? And I think it's really important to have you come back on and talk about it, right?
If you're willing to do that, we would love to explore that further.
Thank you. But it's a twofold question. One is, why would a wife or a husband have to take guardianship of their or wife when they are married? That's the first question. And the second is, why on earth would anybody take guardianship? Why do you have to go to court to take guardianship when guardianship means ward of the state, period?
Mm-hmm.
It's ward
no,
of
not
the state.
Always.
That's
I mean,
what the definition is,
yeah.
Ward of the state.
Well,
sure,
okay,
ward of
what
the state.
State you live in.
Yeah.
I'm
what
sorry,
state
what?
You live in?
What
state
do you live in?
Michigan.
Michigan.
Okay. I live in Kentucky. We do a lot of, like, when a husband and wife, either one might have dementia. You know, they may actually, people not actually realize they have dementia, they may actually go sell off everything they own. They could quite possibly sell off, you know, all kinds of valuable assets, and there's nothing that someone can stop them from doing. But the spouse
right.
can still live in the same house as their wife, but the guardianship prevents any sale that someone that is, I'm just going to use dementia because it's the best thing I can come up with right now.
Right.
One spouse from another spouse not actually thinking clearly. I'm not saying they
right.
have to take it. I'm saying it's safe to take it.
Right, yeah, and I'm really glad that I was put in charge of my husband back in the guardianship back then because I could not imagine a regular guardian coming in off the street and taking care of my husband. That would have, you know, I don't know if it would have been as corrupt back then 20-some years ago like it is now, but I thank God I had control of the situation, you know. So, and as far as the other question, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I ended up guardianship. I'm just grateful that happened, and that's I'm going to leave it at that, you know. But I can come on some other time and talk about how I became a guardian of my mother and of my husband, you know. I've also been a trustee of my daughter as well, so I know how all this pans out. But definitely we want to bring you back
like
on the radio
show. And
I
feel like the lady in Michigan might have got the bad end of it.
Yeah.
And that happens in most states.
A lot of people are getting the bad end of it, and that's a problem because there's a big slippery slope. And once you start cherry picking who gets guardianship and who doesn't, and it's very subjective after a while.
Right. And it's who
have dementia.
Who gets that's another
Every 70-year-old has dementia now. Everybody has dementia. Everybody seems to be diagnosed with it.
I had the most spicy 85-year-old woman.
A second, let's get one at a time talking. Let me do this. We're going to actually move on to another call right now because we have some more people that want to come on to the radio show, and we're going to end it and bring
Thank
in,
you.
And we will bring her back
Thank
on,
you.
And you can ask some more questions. There you go. Let's go ahead and bring on a 386 number, and then we're going to call it quits for the night here. 386, do you have a question or a comment real quick?
Yes. This is Bonnie
Welcome
Carter.
To the show.
How are you? Thank you.
Hi.
It was a great
Hi,
show.
Bonnie.
Hello. I just wanted, I was trying to get the attorney's name because I came in late, and also the lady from Michigan who had some very, very good points to make as well. I was trying to get their names, and I would like to also make a statement about clearly guardianship is an asset for people that have no family. But when you have a family, whether it's a husband-wife situation or a mother and a child or a mother and a, you know, it's simply your right to decide, not the states, not the courts. And if you go into a guardianship, you're giving away your rights, whether you're the guardian or not. It's eventually the judge has the right to decide over the guardian. So why not just stay out of the courts and don't do a guardianship? Isn't that the safest route?
Yeah, well, in my case, it was that my husband had a lawsuit pending and they had to settle the case. The attorneys wanted to settle the case, and for them to rule Mike as he was not well. Okay, my husband was very, very sick. He had something going on with him that I have no explanation to say. He actually died in my front yard in his truck 16 years ago. He died in his truck. We pulled him out of his truck. He died, and it was horrible because then my father-in-law, he had the conservatorship of my husband, which I'm kind of grateful to that to this day. And the whole thing is so hard to even talk about because it was a very stressful time of my life, and that's why I do these broadcasts, because, you know, we have mentally ill people that get into situations. We have people that are being divorced. We have people that are being thrown into a guardianship. We have husbands not be able to see wives in guardianships. All this to me is just the horrifying truth what's going on in our court. You know, so I take a real big,
right.
strong
so,
stand.
So,
like,
so my
Hillary,
point
I,
is
Hillary,
that if you stay out of court, then you remain free. He who enters a courtroom loses.
Yeah, exactly.
You just lose when you go into court. So if you can,
as an attorney, I can't disagree with that either.
The family that, you know, whether you have, my son is very disabled, but the family, he has autism, and the family should have the right to say, as long as they're alive and well, then they should have the right to say and not to go into the court system. You know, there's plenty of time after the family dies for them to have guardians and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But as long as your parents are alive and willing to be part of your life and make decisions for you, that's why the supported decision-making bill that Florida just passed is a fabulous bill. It gets us out of the system. It says we want to make our own decisions.
Yeah. Bonnie, the last person I called in, I will give you their phone number. Her name is Holly. She's on Facebook, too, Holly Delph, and I'll hook you up with her so you can have her phone number and you talk about this because I think you have a lot in common. So we want to go back to Hillary. Are you still with us?
Yes,
I need an attorney, though. I desperately need the attorney's name and number because I am desperately in need of an attorney for a different type of it's a claim, not guardianship court. It's a claim against
Florida.
Okay,
and what state are you in?
I'm in Florida. Do you practice in Florida?
I do not, but I actually have a great friend I went to law school with that does. So, you can have my name and number, and you call me, and I'll give you her name and number.
Okay.
How can they get a hold of you?
I thought you said you had reciprocity in Florida. I must have misheard that.
No. Well, most states have reciprocity. I have reciprocity in Ohio and various states.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you get reciprocity in any state?
It doesn't happen in every state. Some actually make you acquire and take an extra bar exam. And honestly, I've been considering, since I have so many friends and relatives in Florida myself, I've been considering taking the bar exam myself there. But
we could really use you
in
Florida right now. And I bet you $100 that Healy would agree with this, and Marcy Friedman, that both live in Florida. And they said it is a lot of work down there with the guardianship going on.
Oh, it is, and it's a nightmare. But what if you do you get reciprocity by just joining in with another attorney on a case? Because that's what we're going to ask you to do.
if you're
able
to do that.
If the other attorney would accept me, and yes, I could file temporary.
Yes. Well, he will. He's already agreed to it.
So let me get your name and number, and I will speak to you tomorrow, if that's okay.
Yeah. Are you okay to give your phone number out on the air, Casey, with us?
I'm absolutely okay with that.
Okay, okay. So go ahead and
whichever way is okay with you.
Okay.
Okay. My name is Casey Powell, 270-498-0192.
Okay.
I'm sure you're
going to
be getting a lot
498-0192, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And Casey Powell, okay.
You're welcome.
What would be the best time to call you?
You know what? Sometimes in the afternoons is probably the best after getting my little off school bus, but call anytime and I'll call you back.
All righty.
That
sounds great.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Bonnie, for calling in. Casey, thank you so much. And we're going to be getting a hold of you to be bringing you back on a guest in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, and we will also bring back
anytime.
Bridget with you on that.
Bridget has to come back with me.
No,
yeah,
but thank you. I will.
No,
love
she's
to come
my
back.
Girl, and she's Erin Brockovich. She's like literally, I would never pick anybody other as a special investigator. You guys have no idea how much work this woman has done, and she puts most attorneys I've ever met to shame.
That's amazing.
That's huge, Jen.
Well, thank you, Bonnie,
for coming
on.
She knows that. She's being bashful, but she absolutely knows that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, and I will be back in touch with you. Bridget, do you have any closing words that you want to talk about, what you want to see happen, and if anybody wants to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Okay, I'm going to give you my email to get a hold of me. It's D and then my name, Bridget, B-R-I-D-G-E-T, @gmail.com. You know, what I'd like to happen, what I'm going to continue to push for and try to connect with any and all people who really want to try to advocate to bring awareness and make change. So whether that means we all brainstorm, figure out some form of regulation for these state courts, or whether that means, you know, even going straight to the lawmakers and changing it through new legislation, I'm up for any and all of it because the problem is so paramount. It is truly bigger than life, and it's right in front of our faces. It's right under our noses, and it affects, you know, I read a crazy statistic, don't quote me on this one, but something like 250 million people in this country will have some experience with the court in their lifetime. Any way you slice it, several hundred million people are impacted by these individuals, human beings who can be faulted, and they have omnipotent power. So that has to be reined in.
And you know what?
We just have
Bridget,
for
that second, I actually believe with you 1,000,000% on that, but I also think that at some point we need to figure out how the attorneys that are actually being bullied and not allowed to speak out for the truth, because if they do, they're going to be the ones taken down.
Right. I have 5 or 6 other attorneys that have been bullied. That has been on our radio, so to speak out. I can connect you
with
them.
Well, you know what? And I have a bunch of those, too, and I would love for you to connect me with those. That happens all the time. And people are always like, okay, well, the attorneys are bad. And then you come across the points where, well, no, they're not bad. They're just too scared because they can police themselves, and they can take out all the bad people. I mean, they can take out whoever they think is bad. And that's something we have to fix. And that's, Bridget and I have spoke about that. And we've come across many different ways, suggestions, and we will actually work it out some way, somehow. And it's a good team.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hillary, are you still with us?
I am still here.
And what a great show. I mean, lots of information to use in the corruption to fight it, and another attorney who is a good one.
Another good attorney, and
yes,
we hope,
yes,
to God, you get a license in Florida.
Thank
we
you.
Can use your help down there. God. I've got another caller, a 720 number, but I
that's
can't
a great
get you in
idea because she's a fighter.
There you go.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
you
great
definitely need one down there. We need as many attorneys as we can down there in Florida.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say before we close up the show tonight?
Casey?
You know,
yeah,
what?
Casey.
I was not even aware of any of these kind of shows, and Bridget sent it on TikTok, and she tagged me into it, and I actually just signed on to support Bridget. Because what she's doing is amazing, and I was on the side of, I can't do this anymore, but then when I saw somebody who's not even an attorney fighting so freaking hard, I knew I had to. Like, I could not give up. So, you know, you get help in all these different ways that you don't even know you're getting that in, and she gave me that. So, thankfully that you had me and I was invited.
There you go. Thank you. We're going to get you back on the show. Hillary, do you have something to say before we close up the shop tonight?
Just a great show, and we will continue fighting for justice in the probate, family, and divorce courts throughout our country. And we will be here next Wednesday doing the same thing. And thank you.
Right. And Robin?
Thanks to all for doing it. Thank you so much for what you do.
Well, we've been doing it for 5.5 years. These shows have been going for 5.5 years. And we put a lot of families together, haven't we? Our show between Marcy and Hillary.
And I wish I found out before now.
Yeah, awesome. Don't give up whatever you do. And remember, justice requires
transparency
and
accountability.
And giving up is not an option.
Okay, I love that. That was... Oh, my God, that was awesome. Say that again.
Justice requires transparency and accountability, and giving up is not an option.
That's what we say on every end of our radio
show. 11-year battles and everything I ever do, like, I needed you guys. Y'all did my encouragement when I didn't have
any. Oh, my God.
I'm so glad.
I'll be calling
you
maybe tomorrow to come on the show. Okay, everybody.
Bridget,
absolutely.
Do you have any closing words that you want to share?
Yeah, Bridget.
Yes, ma'am.
Just you all are fabulous, and I'm so grateful that you had me, and thank you for letting me share my experience. And hopefully we're going to, you know, make some real changes because we're not going to quit.
Absolutely.
Ever.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's our generation going to do it, aren't they? And we had another caller that called in a little bit too late. If you call us, please do it before the hour is up so I can get you into the queue. Otherwise, everybody, you're listening to Faces Radio on Hidden Truth Revealed. We are called the Inside Scoop. My name is Loanne Fleming. Hillary Hogue was just with us. Marcy Friedman had the night off. And this is Robin Austin as we say to you, good night, everybody.
Good night.
We will see you all.
Good night.
Again,
God
next week, same
everyone.
Time, same channel, same everything. Let's play My Last Regret by Charmaine Sauer. She also had her mother in guardianship as well. So here we go. Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Good
night.
Night.
I've been lying here thinking about the day we met, the day forever was set. How much time we've got left, I find myself crying. My eyes out, I gotta make you believe in me. Without one doubt, I'm gonna make a path. My last regret, because regret from my past. I'm gonna make